Welcome to Deep Talk, the podcast for advanced English learners who are looking to explore something a little bit deeper. Hello and welcome to episode 32 of Deep Talk. I am joining you from Amsterdam, where I have both insomnia and incredibly sore toothache. So I'm going to keep this short today because I want to go back to bed. Today I'm joined by Nora. Nora is absolutely amazing. We connected sometime last year on Instagram and we have become, I hope, friends. She's my friend. It's like that viral meme, like, sure, I mean, I'm your best friend. That's cool for you. That's how it feels. I love Nora to bits. Really excited for her to join us and talk about two of her favorite topics and then also a bonus third one, which we get into towards the end. News from my end that I just want you to know about. Deep Talkers is still open. Get yourself into that, blah, blah, blah. The English Teachers Coaching Group is going live next week, meaning that you can actually find out what it's all about, because I will have made decisions by then and have made a sales page and you'll be able to join up. So if you are interested in that, I'll pop the waitlist link in the episode description, but if you're catching this kind of by Tuesday, Wednesday next week, then hopefully that will that sales page will be up and ready there. Nothing else. Can't think of anything else to tell you. As I say, I'm in agony right now, so I'm just going to get straight on with this conversation that I recorded with Nora last week. I hope you enjoy it. Bye-bye. Hello, Nora. Welcome to Deep Talk.
Hello. Nice to be here.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm very, very excited. I mean, we're planning to speak about my favorite topics in the world, essentially. So I really can't wait. How are you?
I'm really well. Yeah. I was amazed when I sent you that message that said, hey, look, it looks like our timetables are finally calm at the same time. Let's get this in. And you were like, I have no idea what to talk about. I was like, well, I do. I know what I want you to talk about.
Yeah, I was surprised that I didn't come up with that idea, because looking back now, it seems like the only logical thing to have me talk about, but it really wouldn't have occurred to me, because for me, all of the topics we are going to talk about are such a natural part of my life that it didn't seem interesting or exceptional.
Right, interesting. Well, holding the audience in a little bit of suspense, yes. Before we jump onto your favorite topic in the whole world, can you just introduce yourself to us?
Of course, that is my second favorite topic in the whole world. I'm Nora. I'm a business communication expert and English confidence coach. So what I do is I help people become fantastic business English communicators so they can give an important presentation to their CEO and all of the, I don't know, investors, stakeholders, make English mistakes during that presentation, think, potentially even say fuck when they make the mistake. You said I'm allowed to say that. And then just carry on with their day and nobody notices the mistake because they've communicated so well. Yes. So my focus really is on the communication strategies and the confidence, because science also shows us if you present confidently, if you speak confidently, nobody notices mistakes. And that's what I emphasize. And I don't really work a lot on the details of grammar or the mistakes themselves, but on how we can speak effectively while also making mistakes. Yeah.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I absolutely love that. And we will take some time at the end for us to dive into a little bit more detail, because
yes,
you just gave me shivers. That sounds so good. I love the idea of being able to fuck something up,
yeah,
and it not carry with you for like the rest of the day. That's something, yeah, I talk about with my clients a lot. I'm already diving into it now. Look at me go. But like just the idea of being able to take a mistake. And yeah, okay, maybe your brain goes, yeah, oh, shit, fuck, crap, like, what did, yeah, I just do? Oh, my God. And then it stops. And that lasts for 30 seconds, maybe even less. And then you just get on with it and you walk out of that meeting going, you know what? That was absolutely great.
Yeah. And the thing is, I am going to go a little bit into it because you already mentioned it. I also work in communication, business communication coaching. So I have my own business. And then the second thing I do is I work with another company where we do business communication coaching. And all of these people that work for this company also teach in English, and their English is not perfect. They make mistakes. I know how they talk. They have accents. They forget third person S's. They sometimes don't know words.
Yeah.
But they get paid an insane amount of money for their coaching because they are expert communicators. And because that is what really matters. Nobody cares whether they have an accent or not, because that's not the point, particularly not in business English.
Yeah.
You need to be able to sell what you have to sell and talk about what you need to talk about. Yeah. And that's the point. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely love it. But let's put aside your second favorite topic and let's move into your number one, which is, I'll let you introduce it. What are we talking about today?
We're talking about both festivals, concerts, live music, and tattoos. So
which
probably
I love.
It's three most important topics in my life. Festivals, tattoos, business English. No, business English actually before tattoos probably.
Oh, okay. All right. We've got a ranking system.
Yeah,
excellent.
Absolutely.
Festivals.
Always.
Let's start with number three because you're wearing a short sleeve top in the video. None of our audience can see this, but I can. And I can already see there's something flowery going on your left shoulder. Yeah. You've got a snail on your right. I can see maybe another plant just underneath it. You've got a word underneath that. Oh, you've just moved and I've seen a hole. How many tattoos do you have?
That is an excellent question. And I should have prepared for this. I should have expected that. It's somewhere around, it's either 19 and a half or 20 and a half.
Okay, and well, you're going to have to explain that half, aren't you? What's the half?
This is a slightly depressing story, but I love it. So I love the tattoo. A friend of mine ages ago, she did that as a hand poke tattoo. So really ink and a needle and no machine, and you just hand poke that. And she passed away before she could ever finish it. And so I love that it is the half and that it's incomplete because it always reminds me of her. Yeah. And so that's why I also always mention it, because it's, for me, it's an important way of keeping that memory alive, I suppose.
Absolutely. That's really beautiful.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the other tattoos that you've got. Another good question perhaps is, what was your first? What got you into tattoos?
My first tattoo is on my back, at the back of my left shoulder. And it's a very old school, you know, like old school sailor style tattoo of just a bird. I think it's supposed to be a swallow. I'm not even sure what type of bird it is, but it's a bird. And then the second one was already the pink flowers that you spoke about on the other side, on the front of my shoulder. And to answer your question, what got me into it? Well, obviously, my first favorite topic, music, got me into it. And really, that was, oh God, I'm realizing this topic goes a lot deeper than I expected. I'm going
to... This is the podcast for it. It's deep talks. Let's dive in.
Okay. So everybody listening, prepare. This is going to now get very personal.
Okay.
Even more personal than the other thing I already spoke about. I used to actually really, as a teenager, lack self-confidence. And then I discovered music that helped me, and that also helped me sort of feel better in my body. And there was one song in particular that sort of triggered that, in which the singer sings about a girl with like sailor style tattoos. And so that was then what got me into getting those first tattoos.
Amazing. So tattoos for you have been part of finding confidence in your body.
Absolutely. like I really, really did not feel great in my body for a big part of my life. And then at some point I realized, okay, people say, or society says, you know, big thighs are bad, but I can put many more tattoos on them. If there's more body, it means there's more space for tattoos. And I really managed to reframe that. And for example, I, for the longest time, I wouldn't wear shorts or I wouldn't wear bikinis. But then the more I tattooed different parts of my body, the more I thought like, okay, now I want to show that off. And so I managed to find confidence in my body by just decorating it.
I love that. And is that how you think of tattoos, decoration?
Absolutely. Yeah. I do think it's definitely decoration. There's also an element, and I think many people who have tattoos will confirm that, there's an element of therapy or of dealing with things that you need to deal with, or also of remembering either good or bad things in your life with them.
Yeah.
So there are many aspects, but definitely decoration is a big one of those.
Yeah. I can completely relate to the therapy side of things. I was having a conversation actually with somebody the other week, and we were talking about, it was a client, and we were talking about avoiding bad feelings. And she confessed that her number one way of avoiding her bad feelings is by getting a piercing, getting a tattoo, or dyeing her hair. And now I'm not saying that you should go and like permanently mark your body as an avoidance of a bad feeling, but we were talking about it and it became clear that for her, this was an element of control. She could control, she could make changes with her body. She was feeling really stuck and frustrated and hopeless. And yet this, she could do this thing that would permanently change her body. Like, how cool is that? Like, for her, it was this like amazing sort of autonomous. It just, for her, it meant having control and being able to take control over the direction her life was going. And I can totally relate to that. I think, as I say, you know, maybe not the best way to deal with your feelings, but I can get what it means to say, I'm going to do this thing to my body and I have that control and I can make that decision for myself.
Yeah, I've never thought about it in those terms that you've now discussed, but I do also know that for some of the people that I know that have tattoos, and also partly for myself, it's also a way of, I mean, nobody enjoys getting a tattoo, right? People who say they enjoy it are usually lying. It sucks. It's not nice. It is painful. But then you have something nice in the end. And for me, and for a lot of people, it always feels like you've had something negative, something hurtful happen. Mm. And you're going through intense pain for then 1.5 hours. But then after the 1.5 hours, the pain is gone and there's just something beautiful that's left. So it's also a bit of a way of working through that, I suppose.
Yeah, it works as a metaphor for the crap that we have to go through in our lives.
Exactly. Yeah,
I like that. That's amazing. And what would you say, because I can't predict the views of the people listening.
Yeah.
It's a modern world. Loads of people have tattoos, blah, blah, blah. But even one or two tattoos is quite different to having 20 all over your body. You know, you wear a short sleeve shirt, you wear shorts. It is very, very clear that you are covered in tattoos. Yeah. What would you say to people who might kind of go, wait, and you are a professional and you work in business communication? Like those two things don't go together.
I mean, there are so, for everybody else, you told me this question. I did know that I could prepare for this question beforehand, and I thought about it and I didn't really know what I would answer. And now I can think of a lot of things. In my personal life, I typically don't go into that discussion because I've also learned that if people want to judge you for something, and this also goes for English mistakes and accents and everything, they are going to judge you for it, and you are not going to change their mind with, you know, with good reasons. You are not. So I don't engage in these discussions. But in general, first of all, the really good news is when you're getting tattooed, it doesn't suck your brain out through your skin. Mm-hmm. So it actually has no influence on your mental capacity. It doesn't actually, you know, change anything about your educational background, about your skills, about what you know, about what you do. And additionally, there's also people sometimes make this joke that there's, you know, there's a certain level of commitment that goes into deciding you'll have an image on your skin for the rest of your life. And if committing to something and being able to commit like that isn't a sign of professionalism, then really what is? That you think this through, you plan for the future, you commit to it, and you stand by that commitment. And then for people who say, well, it doesn't work with business communication, I will be very honest. If I know I'm, for example, I'm doing a real world coaching in a bank, I would not show my tattoos the first time these people meet me.
Right.
So I do have everything in positions where I can cover them up, because I do believe if I know I'm going into a more conservative environment, I don't need to make my life harder by immediately irritating everybody with my tattoos. If I know people, if they already know me, they've met me, they've worked with me, they know what I can do, then I will slowly start revealing a few more tattoos. And I also, it varies really with the audience that I have. So Instagram, for example, for me, I do show my tattoos because I've always said my private business, my own business, is my playground. Mm. I am doing this precisely because I don't want to live by somebody else's rules. And so I will show that on Instagram. In other contexts, I won't always show it. I will, if I know I'm working with a younger group, then I will show a few tattoos. If I know it's going to be difficult, I won't. And the one tattoo, like, people can't see, you might sort of see, there's one tattoo that I have on my left lower arm. That's of two hands reaching out to each other with the words, "Be more kind." And that is the one tattoo that in general people will always see, because, you know, I don't always wear long sleeves. But I've also decided for myself, if anybody in the world has a problem with the fact that there's "Be more kind" written on my arm, then that is so obviously not a person I want to work with or want to work for, or, you know, have a conversation with in any way.
Okay, so moving on to the number one topic, live music.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems, again, from your Instagram, and we all know that Instagram is not true, but it seems that you're at a festival or at a gig like every other day. Tell us, I mean, at the like, start right now in your life now, what role does music and live music in particular play for you?
So, I mean, music, and I think it's the same for a lot of people, is a tool to express yourself, to deal with emotions, to get yourself into a different emotional state. If you need to, you know, cheer up, or if you need to cry about something and you need to let it out, you listen to a sad song. And live music and festivals then in particular, what you don't know about me and what Instagram doesn't know about me, because I didn't have Instagram back then, is that for a long time in my life, I was very boring. I've already told you I was very stressed about the way I looked. And so I thought I had a few years where I think I ran 10 kilometers every day and mainly lived off soup. And obviously that's not a lifestyle that's compatible with having fun. So for a long time, I didn't do these things. Although I would have wanted to go to festivals, I would have wanted to go to concerts, I didn't. And there's a few years in my life where I realized I don't have a single picture with my best friend, who's my concert buddy, who I met at a concert, because I did not do anything, because I was stressed and I thought I had to work all the time. And I thought if I wasn't working, I had to work out or sleep so I can work out again tomorrow. And so for me, the role it plays right now is just not living like that anymore. Mm. So it's very liberating in a way, because, and I think this actually, I'm realizing this also ties in with a lot of what I do regarding English and in my English coaching. I used to have these extremely strict rules in my head of what I had to do and what a day had to be like and what I had to be like. Mm-hmm. And it made me so unhappy. Mm-hmm. It, you know, it did not help me. It just made me miserable and alienated me from a lot of people. And it was not nice. And so now breaking these rules and consciously breaking them and doing the fun things and prioritizing that is very liberating. And that's also why I say in English, I try not to focus so much on the mistakes, because I know as perfectionists, we can get caught up in this whole thing about having to do everything by the rules. And, you know, following the rules is almost a survival mechanism, but it, in the end, it's a prison, really. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if that answer made sense now. I'm realizing I'm getting very...
It absolutely did. It absolutely did. Yeah. And I mean, what you were just talking about was perhaps the action of going to these concerts and losing your inhibitions and dancing and screaming at the top of your lungs and not worrying, do they think I look stupid or are those people looking at me? You're just kind of, I am here, I am present, I'm with my friends.
Yeah.
The music's really loud, I can feel the bass in my heart or whatever
exactly,
it is.
Exactly,
And I'm just being fully present. Does that kind of, I guess, almost the rebelliousness against the rules that, I mean, you're saying you've put on you, but they didn't, you didn't make them up in your head. I'm sure society had
a
role
to
play in creating those rules. Does that also, is that also mirrored in the kinds of music that you listen to?
It, for a very long time, it definitely used to be mirrored in that I think I was very, you know, very snobbish about music and I couldn't listen to anything that was too mainstream, and, you know, everything that was pop music was automatically bad because if it's pop music, you know, it can't be quality music. Not that the terrible punk bands I listen to make quality music in any way. So, and so that used to be reflected in that. And that's also very much changed because I realized that was another one of these rules. Mm. And actually another one of these rules that looking back held me back from a lot of great experiences with people. Because a partner back then, for example, I remember... And this is such a big memory for me, actually. I remember we had tickets to go to a show and he was so happy I wanted to go, or I agreed to go with him. And then I didn't go because I was too stressed and it wasn't real music anyways. And I remember how crushed he was. And now, by the way, I love that. I love that group. I love that band. I flew to Berlin last year to see them live. Like, now I love them, but I... Back then, I was just so caught up again in the rules of what I had to do. And so to answer the question, really, now I, of course, there's music I prefer. There's music I listen to in my free time as well. But I will also go to shows of people, of artists that I don't really listen to. Mm-hmm. So there's one artist that only makes sense in a German language context, but who's very, very popular with, I'm going to say, 45 plus age group in a German language context. Very uncool for anybody younger than that to listen to that. But she's supposedly a brilliant performer and I am going to see her live, and her music is not my taste, but I want to see her. And then, you know, I'm never going to see her again and I'm never going to talk listen to her music again. But why have these, again, these silly rules? I could go there and I could have fun there. Mm. I know I'm going to have fun there and I'm not going to hold myself back from that. Yeah.
I love that. I think that's, I mean, selfishly, I'm listening to you and I'm feeling exposed because you are living your life in a way that perhaps I'm like, ooh, I might be Nora 5 years ago and not Nora now. I relate a lot more to the anxiety-ridden Nora than to this like, yeah, I'm going to go and do it, Nora. And that brings up insecurities that I have. That's fine. I'll put that to one side. I'm just so impressed. I think that's amazing to just go, there's going to be something in this experience that I can get from it. And it may not be the music, but it might just be the atmosphere and the fun and the being in a different kind of crowd, and there will be songs I know because it's really popular.
Yeah, exactly.
And blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's incredible. And would you do the same for like smaller gigs? Like, would you go and see a band that maybe you've never even heard of, but they're performing and you're like, yeah, the tickets is €5. I'll go.
Show me the band that plays for €5 and I'm there immediately.
I haven't been to a small gig in like 15 years.
Yeah, no. To be honest, me neither, probably. So I go to a lot of festivals, and there I will also go and see bands that I don't know, because I mean, you're already there. You've already paid for the whole experience. Regarding the question you just asked, I'd actually like to combine that answer with what you just said about 5 years ago, Nora, and Nora now, and it sounding more exciting, because I do want to also highlight I tried to prioritize these things. I will go to the concerts that I think I can get something from. And you say, okay, it looks on Insta, it looks like I'm always at a gig. Most of the time I am also at home and I'm, you know, still going to bed early because I have a lot of work to do. And I do also still have this tendency to work too much and then not always prioritize the things I want to prioritize. So I just want to keep that very open and real. And I do think I have to admit that if there were a smaller band that I've never heard of, if my friend, so that one friend that I go to everything with, if she's heard of them and she asks me to go, I probably will. I don't see a scenario actually where we just say, okay, let's go, even though we both don't know them.
Right.
Yeah.
And am I to understand just from what you've been saying that you tend to go to the bigger stuff? Like, when was the last time you were in like the cellar of a bar watching like kind of like, you know, like a student band?
That was a while ago, I guess. I mean, I do also go to some smaller events, I suppose. Also because I do listen to a lot of German language music as well. And a lot of that just never gets as big as an English language act, really. But yeah, I typically do not really go. And I want to stress, not because I don't think it's worth going, but because it somehow doesn't happen. I don't really go to gigs where there's 50 people. Typically, I will go to, you know, there's going to be a few thousand people there at least.
Right.
Or 60,000, depending.
Amazing. And something you said, which I think will lead us into you telling us a bit more about training that you've got coming up. But you said something before we went live, and you've mentioned it briefly, that you get, as a communications expert, you get a lot from these gigs in terms of, gigs, that's such a small word, these concerts that you're going to. In terms of how these people are on the stage, their stage presence, how they communicate with the audience. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, what I constantly notice is, and again, I think this is something we can transfer to English business communication as well. It is not about having the best quality music or the deepest lyrics or, you know, the most complicated vocab. It is about how you act on stage and how you also pull the audience in and include them. Do you have conversations with them? Do you address them directly? Do you react to what they're doing? And a really good example for me is always Bob Dylan. We don't need to argue about his English skills. He won a Nobel Prize for Literature for his songs. They are, you know, quality wise, music wise, that is great music. But I think he used to be a good performer before I was born, but definitely in the last few decades, I've only heard people say, well, they went to a gig and he had his back turned to the audience the whole time. I went to one of his shows and he sang all of the songs, you know, but he invented a different tune for every one of them. So, you know, also not really audience engagement, and he didn't talk to the audience at all. But then there's other bands that partly even have, you know, maybe accents, their lyrics don't even make sense when they sing in English, but it doesn't matter because they're there and they're having fun and they radiate how much they love doing that.
Right.
And they, again, they interact and they have the whole attitude and the confidence, and people will dance to that.
Mm-hmm.
When I don't think I've, again, Woodstock was probably different, but since then I've never seen anybody dance to Bob Dylan, no matter how smart his lyrics are.
Right.
Absolutely. I don't know if that example makes a lot of sense to people who don't listen.
And you've just reminded me of the kind of when Glastonbury, which is the biggest music festival in the UK, was happening back in June. There was lots of criticism of Alex Turner from Arctic Monkeys. And I read a really, really interesting article about that, which made me a lot more sympathetic towards him. And just the fact that, you know, you're five or six albums in and you're being judged on your first ever hit. And people are annoyed that you're not still performing that music. He was like 19 when he wrote, like, I Bet You Look Good on the Dance Floor. He's a different person now in his like late 30s. But he will just sing his songs, and like there are so many memes about the crowd like trying to sing along, but he's like, no, we're doing it differently.
Oh God. Yeah. I also recently saw them live, and I mean, you make a good point with musicians should be allowed to evolve and their style should be allowed to change. But I also have to say, I did not really enjoy seeing them live that much.
Had you seen them before that? Did you see them earlier?
No.
I saw them on the tour for their second album, and it was phenomenal. Okay. It was so good. So good. Yeah, that was amazing. Okay, we're going to wrap it up. I'm aware of the time. We've gone over a little bit. That's absolutely fine. Tell us about the event that you've got coming up on August the 10th, she says, hoping that she got the date right.
She did. Yes, August 10th. So I am going to tell you a little bit of backstory for that. Half a year ago, one reel that I did went viral, and it was a reel about how to write an out-of-office email.
Right.
And from what you've hopefully now also heard about what I do, that is actually not what I want to focus on in my business. But I also have a research background in business communication. I know a lot about writing emails. But so for the past half year, people have been approaching me, asking me about emails. And I don't want to have that. As much as I love helping people with their emails, I don't want to do that for the rest of my life. So August 10th, the big event, I'm doing a live masterclass called Effortless English Emails. The idea is really I will pour absolutely everything I have and I know into this. I will do my best to make it the best class on English business emails available anywhere. And after that, I am never going to talk about emails again, and I'm going to focus on oral communication, which is what I want to move on to in my business now. But so this is going to be a live masterclass. It is going to be recorded as well. I know that a lot of people don't have time on August 10th, which is fine. So if you sign up before the event, you get access to a survey, the pre-class survey, where you can put all of your questions, all of your email needs, anything you need. I will make sure to include that in the class. I will answer that in the class. It will be recorded. And if you've bought your ticket, you have lifetime access to the recording and to all materials. So even if you can't be there, you can still benefit from it. And you can be sure that your questions will be answered and the class will be tailored to your needs as well.
That sounds amazing. Yeah. And also just from a business owner to business owner perspective,
yeah.
I love the idea of guys, I'm going to do this once.
Yeah.
And you better be listening. And then exactly. That's it.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you for supporting that. Yeah. That's the plan. I do love talking about emails as well, but I'm just ready to move on because I've spoken about emails and taught emails for the past 10 years. So this will really be everything I know, everything I can possibly pack into 2.5 hours and a lot of bonus materials. And then that topic is history for me personally, but everybody who's got the ticket can benefit from that forever.
And to clarify, will people still be able to buy that ticket afterwards? It's just that they won't have that survey. It means you'll be answering that question.
Exactly. So if anybody listens to this in a year's time, 2024, and you realize, oh, now I need my English emails, you should hopefully still be able to buy the ticket. But of course, it won't be tailored to you anymore.
Amazing. And of course, listeners can find the link to that in the episode description. Nora, awesome. Thank you so much for being a guest. This has been really, really fun.
Thank you for allowing me to talk about these things. I'd love to continue talking about it, but not today.
Not today. But it's been such a pleasure. Yeah. All right, I'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
My thanks once again to Nora for that conversation. I really hope you enjoyed it. As always, share your thoughts on Instagram, send either of us a DM letting us know what you thought. Do you go to music festivals? Do you have tattoos? Do you struggle writing emails in English? It's all relevant. We want to hear from you. As I promised, I have popped the link to the Effortless English Emails Masterclass in the episode description. Nora sold it so well, didn't she? I'm never gonna do this again. This is your chance. And when I tell you that Nora is an expert, Nora is an expert, like PhD, a decade's worth of research level expert in business communication. So whether you sign up for this or not, you should definitely be following her. If you work in English, if kind of professional communication has a little bit of an anxiety button for you, follow her. She will make you feel amazing, because you should feel amazing. It's really not as difficult as people have made you think. Anyway, that's it for now. Thank you so much for listening. I've been Rhiannon. This has been Deep Talk. Have a wonderful day.